welcome into the 48th episode of the Calcio Connection podcast, connecting with you, Italian football fans from all over the world. So even though the Scudetto race is done, Juventus clinched that before our last episode. And, you know, they certainly had nothing to play for against Cagliari, and it showed in their upcoming match. But they are the champions of Italy for the 2019-2020 season. So even though the Scudetto is decided, the race for second place is going to be pretty awesome heading into the final match day on Saturday. So we'll get to everything that transpired. We'll talk some about Inter's 2-0 victory over Napoli. Now, at some point in this pod, we're expecting to be joined by Joe Fischetti from the Forza Napoli pod. He would have been with us from the start, but we kind of screwed him over by changing our schedule for this episode so many times. So at some point, Joe is going to hop on. So if he comes in late, it's certainly not his fault. It's our fault. And Ciro Immobile picked up goal number 35 against Brescia. Honestly, I thought he could have scored more, but we'll get to that in a moment. But he's only one goal away from tying Gonzalo Higuain's record of 36 with one match day to play. And before we get into it, I want to throw a huge shout out to my father. Now, I did tweet about him prior to the Napoli match. He has this delightful superstition. Maybe it's not so delightful because it, like, his superstitious nature watching sports has kind of screwed me up since my childhood. But Jerry, I don't know if you saw me tweet about this, but it's true, and his record now is perfect since the restart. My father has convinced himself and me that he is bad luck. Now, my father is a hardcore Interista. That's where I got my Inter support from, was from my dad. He raised me as an Interista. And my father has realized that they do not do well in the matches that he watches. So now he only watches Inter games on replay. So thankfully, like in the States, we have ESPN Plus where you can, you know, rewatch the match wherever you want to. It's all archived digitally. So he'll go back and watch the games later in the day. He's convinced they play better when he doesn't watch. The last game that he actually watched from start to finish was Inter's collapse against Bologna, against a 10-man Bologna. That's when he decided he's terrible luck. And they have had a couple of draws since then. But Inter has not lost a game since my father stopped watching the games live. So he is a true Interista. He loves the team, but he takes one for the team by not watching the matches. I am Alex Dono. Let me introduce my co-host, Jerry Mancini. Jerry, are you a superstitious guy? Do you have, like, any clothes you have to wear, any jersey you have to wear when Lazio are playing? Do you have any beliefs that you can actually affect the team the way that my father clearly affects Inter?
I'm the biggest mush. So so anybody who knows me personally, if I bet for my team, most of the time they lose. It doesn't matter. Like, if my Twitter account, half the time I say in the past recent weeks, yeah, Lazio's going to win. Ciro Immobile's going to have a big game. Somehow it goes wrong. And I've mentioned on my account before, I should just keep my mouth shut because it's the best thing. And I feel that anytime I don't say anything, my Lazio performs even better. But in a way, I am superstitious. In a way, I'm not. I think at the end of the day, what I control doesn't really affect the team. Either they're going to play to win, and if it's their day, it's their day. If it's not, it's not. That's how, like, watching the game yesterday with Immobile having, like, at least 20 chances and only burying one goal, I think it wasn't that Immobile didn't do what he had to score. It's more that Brescia is making a case for certain players want a job next season in Serie A, and I respect the fact that they still played hard. They made it difficult for Lazio. They didn't make it easy for Immobile to score to break a record. Right. And credit to Lorenzo and Iheanacho, who made a lot of beautiful saves and maybe made a case for himself for a number two spot as a goalkeeper for a top-flight team. There's a few players who stood out yesterday, and who knows who's on site to watch this team and maybe audition for a position with a more mid-table, weaker team next season. I'm pretty sure that a lot of these guys don't want to go back down and play in Serie B. I would assume that Brescia and along with Spal, there are a few players in Spal that don't come to mind right now, but would make a case to help next year on a better team. And look at Empoli. Empoli had a few good players that were...
Yeah, Bennacer was there.
Bennacer. And we had Francesco Caputi, who was on Empoli last season, if I'm not mistaken. Correct me if I'm wrong on that one. And then there are a few, I would say a handful, that came from Empoli and have made a case for themselves with other clubs and have been low cost and such a high reward. So these are the best teams to actually go after and try to sign players, because why spend 40 million on a key name, say, that may not produce as well and cost more, and there's a high risk to it. So I think a lot of teams should really look into basically looking at even Genoa or Lecce. One of those two teams do not stay up. Well, one of them is not going to stay up. There's a lot of players that teams, you know, example, Lazio. We know how cheap freaking Lotito is. But again, Ilitari, he's the type of guy who will go after Lecce and take a guy like Mancuso and bring him over for not a high cost, but a good player that will transition well. And we've seen that with Luis Alberto, Ciro Immobile, and I can see a team like Lazio doing that. We did that with Manuel Lazzari last season. We bought him from Spal, and look how good he's done this season. So those are the type of players that really come out when it comes to Lazio. They don't like to spend 50 million on a high profile player, because chances are it might be difficult to sell them after. So it'll be interesting to see how that goes out, though.
So heading into the final weekend, and we're going to bring on our special guest here in a moment, who is aboard with us now. I mentioned the race for second place. So you've got Juventus, obviously, they've clinched with 83 points. You have Inter currently in second with 79 points. Atalanta with 78 points. And Inter and Atalanta are going head-to-head on the final match day. Lazio also on 78 points. And they're facing Napoli on the final match day. So, you know, obviously, if anyone between Inter and Atalanta wins their game outright, they'll be second place. Actually, I'm not sure about Jerry. Do you have the and maybe Joe can help with this as well. Joe Fischetti from Forza Napoli Pod. I can't remember how the season series went with Lazio and Atalanta. Who has the tiebreaker there? Because I can't recall off the top of my head. So Atalanta. So
Lazio,
I was right initially.
The second time 3-2. And I just wanna
gotcha.
I said Francesco Caputi by accident, Caputo. And yeah, and he was with Empoli last season. And before we go on, I know I'm going sidetrack here. This guy has some incredible stats, man.
Oh, yeah, like, he's been great.
Wow. 16 goals last season. The season prior, 26 goals. And then with Virtus Entella, he scored 18 goals and 17 goals in Serie B. And then with Bari, he scored 11 goals, 17 goals, and two of his last three seasons with the club. This guy is so underrated. What I honestly do believe that this guy deserves a chance with Italy next summer, because he has 21 goals this season with Sassuolo. That is highly remarkable. Like, I think that he doesn't get mentioned enough, and I think he's only being mentioned now because of the team that he plays on, and I think it's more of the manager he plays underneath with De Zerbi.
Yeah, De Zerbi deserves a lot of praise this year for sure.
He would be a good number three option for Italy, and this is really good. This is really good because I know he's 32 years old, but this is good in the time that we're in right now, because we've been so heavily dependent always on one main striker. We've had Balotelli in the past, who's been our number one. I can't recall who else we've depended on in a number nine spot. But to have three options, I think is a blessing for this team. Because if Immobile doesn't, knock on wood, doesn't come to that form next summer that we've seen, because he's getting a year older, and then we have Belotti, who's getting a year older, and then we have now Caputo. I know he's 32, but yes, and he is getting a year older. But these are players that have a lot of experience and have flourished really well in their positions right now. So this is really encouraging for Euros.
Very well said. And so, yeah, just to finish my thought, so Lazio could still be second place with a win over Napoli if Atalanta and Inter draw. And, of course, Atalanta and Inter, if anyone comes out victorious in that matchup, they would be second place. So let's bring in our special guest for this episode, good friend of the show. He hosts the Forza Napoli podcast and does a great job with that. You know, we wanted to get Joe on to recap Inter-Napoli, which did go Inter's way 2-0. And Napoli, they're facing Lazio this weekend, so there's a lot to get to. Joe Fischetti is with us. Joe, how you doing, man?
I'm great. Thanks for having me back on, guys. As much as it sucks to lose that match to Inter, I'm still doing pretty well.
Yeah, and it was interesting because, when Napoli beat Inter 1-0 in the first Coppa Italia leg, that was a case where it was, you know, counterattacking. You know, Inter held a lot of the possession in that game. Napoli was more clinical with their chance. And for Inter, a lot of the games that Inter has lost this year have come in games where they've controlled possession and just gotten beaten with quick goals on the counterattack, where this was kind of the opposite. Napoli had a lot of the possession in this game. They had more total shots, not as many on goal, and Handanovic had a couple of big saves in the game. But Inter, who really controlled the first 10 minutes and got the opening goal from D'Ambrosio, and then they suffered some. Napoli really controlled the rest of the match and had a lot of chances. I was very surprised that Inter didn't concede, because usually they do concede when they give up that much control to a team that's as talented as Napoli. Lautaro was able to get a late goal as a substitute. A really nice goal. We'll get more into that in a second to put the match away at 2-0. But Joe, I mean, how did you feel about the overall flow from a Napoli standpoint? Because I thought Napoli did very well. This was just one of those days where, you know, Inter did a nice job keeping a clean sheet.
Yeah, I had the same sentiments watching this match. In the Coppa Italia match, it was a completely different game plan. Napoli's plan was to sit back and counterattack. And like you said, Inter dominated the possession in that match, and Napoli were fortunate to capitalize on really their only chance in the match. This time, they played far more positively, and ironically, they got the worst result. And I think that was intentional. You know, Gattuso's spoken quite a bit about how these final matches of the season, which were against three pretty good clubs in Sassuolo, Inter, and then Lazio coming up next, are preparation for their Champions League match against Barcelona. So I was expecting Napoli to play a bit more of a positive game, because they know that in that Champions League match against Barcelona, they need to score. They can't sit back. It's really not a good approach. And, you know, Barcelona hasn't been in the best form. So things are looking pretty good for that match. They definitely have a good chance to go through. Yeah. Other than the first 10 minutes, or I guess 11 minutes of this match against Inter, Napoli were the better side. But one of the biggest problems I've had, not just in this match, but really over the last, other than the Sassuolo match, the other four matches that they played, I think they were against Bologna, then Udinese, and then Parma, was that Napoli's finishing has been really, really poor lately. And part of that has to do with Mertens getting hurt. Part of that has to do with Arkadiusz Milik pretty much having checked out and looking ahead to wherever he ends up, probably Juventus, it seems. But Napoli really have struggled to score, especially Lorenzo Insigne. He's had the most chances and probably from the best positions on the pitch, and he can't find the back of the goal. So that's a big concern for me. Hopefully, Mertens has enough time to recover ahead of that Champions League match against Barcelona, or else it's going to be a tough one just because we're struggling to score right now.
Yeah, I really felt like Politano was destined to score in this match, and he had at least one great chance, but you know, he should have one-timed it, and then he tried to put it on his left foot. That in, you know, as an Interista watching him last season, I know how it is with Politano, that he really is a one-footed player. He's always cutting inside on the left. If he had been a little bit more decisive with his chance, he could have caught Handanovic off guard. You mentioned Insigne, who I thought had some really good chances. Something I wanted your opinion on the Lautaro goal. You know, from Lautaro's standpoint, it was a fantastic pace. Fantastic shot he took from outside the box, great pace on it. But did you think that Alex Meret could have done a little bit better? Because he did have time to react to it, right? And I even noticed that, you know, like the big footy accounts, you know, the ones that have tons of followers who posted the video clip, you know, a lot of the comments, probably more of the comments, instead of saying, oh, what a great goal by Lautaro, were, what was the goalkeeper doing there? I thought maybe that was maybe a little bit unfair to Merritt, but how did you think about his effort on that shot?
Yeah, I actually do put that one on Merritt. It's funny because if you look at the goals that Napoli has conceded lately, they're rarely conceding a goal because they're being outplayed sort of tactically. It's usually that they concede a goal on a counterattack, or they concede a goal because they make a dumb mistake, whether it was Fabian trying to play a cheeky little chip to get out of the box against Atalanta and they got burned on that one, or in this match against Inter, the first goal started with Mario Rui. Instead of playing the easy ball back to Meret, he tries to pop it over Brozovic. They concede possession. Next thing you know, the ball's in the back of the net. On the second goal, though, it wasn't tactics. It was just poor goalkeeping. If you look at where Meret is standing, I think Lautaro just caught him off guard with that shot.
Yeah.
He's way too deep in his goal. He's nearly on the byline. And when a player is shooting from that distance, you really need to be further out, at least at the top of the six-yard box. And when you do that, as a keeper, if you're standing on the byline, you have a lot more ground to cover to make the save. When you come out, just like in hockey, for example, when you come out, you cut down the angle and it makes the target smaller. Meret didn't do that. And I do think maybe he was a little bit, he saw the ball a little bit late because Lautaro shot it sort of around Koulibaly. But he had plenty of time to get there if he was well positioned. I do think you have to give Lautaro credit, though, at least some of the credit, because he did well to take the ball on his chest and to get around Diego Demme. And only a striker can make a play like that. You know, when you see a midfielder or definitely a defender try to shoot from distance, they put their head down and they go for power, and the ball rarely hits the target. Lautaro got a decent amount of strength on the shot, but he took a little bit off it to ensure that it was accurate. And I don't care who you are, to pick the corner from that distance takes a lot of skill. So you do have to give Lautaro some credit for the ball.
And boy, he needed that. I mean, his form has been pretty dismal since the restart, with speculation that his head is in Barcelona, you know, the big contract they've offered him, you know, unsure as to whether or not that transfer is going to get finalized. And it's still very unsure heading in to the off season. So I hope, and obviously it's very late in the Serie A season, but I hope that this can help him catch form for Europa League, because I know Conte would love to win that competition. Go ahead, Jerry.
I want to add something. His goal was nice, but his attitude's shit. And there is a play where Biagi is going down the wing, and he opts to take a shot in the position he's in. He's on the left side. He fires a shot on goal. And Meret, I believe, makes the save. He gets mad because he doesn't elect to pass the ball into the goal area. I believe it's to Martinez, because he's upset after. And you hear the announcer. He says it perfectly. What is he supposed to do in that situation where he's supposed to take that shot in how he's being covered? I think he makes the right choice as well. But it's the attitude and the way Lautaro just responds, and how disgusted he is with Biagi. And it's like, this guy is just, I honestly question sometimes his like leadership on a team. And yeah, he may be skillful, but I feel that he lacks in a lot of other areas that is detrimental and really hurts his team, rather than more beneficial for his side. When you see Lukaku and a player misses a chance, there'll be times he's upset, okay? But he's always encouraging his side. He's always clapping. He's always giving a thumbs up. He's always giving encouragement. And I think that's really important for his team to show that the striker is being appreciative and is keeping the morale up. Whereas Martinez, he really, if it's not going his way, he can really take the team down with him. And I saw that on that exact play. And I have mixed feelings about how I feel about Martinez. Yes, he has this skill that can come out any given day. I think one, consistency has been an issue for him recently. Two, I wonder if the talks of him going to Barcelona are still in the back of his head.
They've got to be. I think they're definitely in the back of his head.
If they are, go call Sergey Milinkovic-Savic because he'll give you a tip or two of how to deal with it and how to understand that you are paid by a club, like he said. You have a long-term contract with a club, like Savic said. Honor your contract, like Savic said. And that, is to me, is a true leader and a true, genuine pro. I feel that, yes, Martinez is still young and still needs a lot of maturing, but this is a big step in his career that can either make him or really break him. So I would really suggest this guy giving Savic a call, because we saw what happened to Savic's season last year. A lot of people were calling for him to come out, leave Lazio, wasn't good. Lotito, Tare, they bit the bullet, they kept with him, and it's paid off. Now, can the same be said for Martinez? Absolutely. But it all depends on how Conte really handles the situation. And right now, I feel that there's a little distance between him and the club, and even his attitude. Just it's really scary for the club. And I'm scared that maybe it could eventually lead into a Mauro Icardi situation. I know that the Icardi situation was different with his wife and the whole contract, but we can see that heading that way if Martinez doesn't get what he wants as well.
Yeah, I'll say one more thing on it. Then I want to get a thought from Joe on something else in the match. But on Martinez, I hope that either he goes to Barca with Inter getting fair payment in return, or if he stays at Inter, which I think at this point he's probably, this changes every week, but at this point it appears he's more likely to stay at Inter than to go to Barca. Barca has some financial troubles. They would need to sell several players before buying him, and Inter is not going to accept crackerjacks in return. So I think it's more likely he stays. But if he does stay, I hope it's on a new deal and not, you know, one more season on his current contract looking at Barca to just run out the door next summer, because I think he needs some closure in either direction. Like, there are maturity issues, and guess what? He's 22 years old, so I can understand. I mean, I certainly didn't have the maturity at 22 years old that I have now at 35, and I probably, when I'm 45, I'll look back at what an idiot I was at 35, right? So he's still a very young guy. But I think maybe some closure in either leaving to Barca or signing an extension with Inter. I think he makes about $1.5 million currently per season, and he may make as much as $7 million with Inter with a contract extension. So hopefully it would give him some closure. But speaking of strikers, I want Joe's take on what was, I think, a pretty entertaining battle between Lukaku and Koulibaly. And they certainly both had their moments. I mean, Koulibaly at one point, I think it was late in the first half, had just one of the most beautiful clean tackles on Lukaku that you will ever see, where Lukaku, like, you know, kind of like did like a flip over him because Koulibaly caught it so clean. I also thought, honestly, Lukaku, who didn't score in the match, probably should have had two assists if his teammates had finished the chances, because he had a beautiful seemed like a beautiful ball to Alexis Sanchez after actually beating Koulibaly, dribbling past him, but then Sanchez kind of slipped, and then, you know, later in the match, Lukaku had like a long-range ball to Barella that Barella had a terrible, terrible first touch. So I thought the stat sheet could have been a little bit better for Lukaku. He had some moments in that battle. Koulibaly had some moments. I'm actually surprised that Lukaku did as well as he did, because Koulibaly, I've seen him smother opposing strikers, inter-strikers, you know, like Icardi over the years. So what did you think, Joe, about watching that battle between Lukaku and Koulibaly?
I loved every second of it. I tweeted at halftime. I like to tweet my first half thoughts. And one of the points I made was that Koulibaly is the anti-Lukaku. But I actually think they both had outstanding matches. I'll start with Koulibaly. You know, he had a really tough start to the year, and there were a lot of people scratching their heads. A lot of that, I think, was because of the African Cup of Nations, and it was just a domino effect of sort of having to always play catch-up in terms of fitness. But since the restart of Serie A, Koulibaly has looked just like the Koulibaly that we've known for the last couple of years, which actually makes it a bit of a joke that Manchester City is reportedly offering 65 million euros for him, because I think 80 million euros would be a discount.
Yeah.
That tackle on Lukaku, I think for people that are not Napoli fans, it may have been the first time they've seen something like that, but he actually does it on a fairly regular basis. And I genuinely think he's the best slide tackler in all of Europe. And, you know, there are other plays where he's very reliable. He cleans up everything at the back. One thing, going back to the Sassuolo match, that, you know, all the talk was about the four goals that were disallowed due to offside and how fortunate Napoli were. I don't think that was luck at all. I think that was a really effective back line, which again is led by Koulibaly playing the offside trap. In terms of Lukaku, what I noted in this match was, to your point, Alex, even though he didn't score, we really saw how good he is in so many other areas on the pitch. There was one play where he actually beat Koulibaly on the wing. He ran right around him, and I had flashbacks of Kulusevski doing that against Napoli in the Parma match, and I was just praying to God that Lukaku didn't go down in the box, because it would have been a penalty the way calls are made these days. Yeah. And then he made a number of other good plays. Right at the end of the first half, we saw his strength where he held up the ball against Koulibaly again, I believe it was, and then he laid it off for Brozovic, and Medet made a really good save. And then his best play was the one that you mentioned, where he played the pass to Barella on the wing, and he receives what was a pretty hard pass facing his own goal at midfield. Then he stops on a dime because he sees Insigne approaching him. He turns quickly, and then with the outside of his boot, he plays the ball to Barella, which, you know, for a big man, you know, in my preview of this match, I talked about how Lukaku is one of these rare players. The best comparison I can find right now is probably Duvan Zapata, where as they're big and they're strong, but they're incredibly athletic and they're very skillful with their feet. So I thought they both had excellent matches, even though Lukaku didn't score.
So I want to segue into the Lazio-Napoli match at the weekend. And of course, I want Jerry's take on this as well. But let me start with you, Joe. Now, you know, Napoli, they're already in Europa League. They cannot improve their table position in this match because they're 4 points behind Milan heading into the final match day. So I guess what I'm asking is, what sort of squad rotation do you expect? Do you think it's going to be just all about thinking ahead to Barcelona in Champions League, or are they going to try to win this match? Because and obviously from a Lazio perspective, they have plenty to play for because there is financial incentive to finish in second place, even if they still are guaranteed, more than likely guaranteed Champions League if they don't win this match. So what do you expect Napoli's approach to be?
Sorry. So, yeah, my position on this has changed after the Inter match. Before the Inter match, I was thinking that Gattuso's going to do everything he can to try to replicate that Barcelona game, and he's going to rotate less and start his starting 11, his preferred starting 11, in preparation for that match. But what's happened over the last two matches is Napoli have picked up some significant injuries. So we had Mertens a couple of matches ago take a knee into his ass, of all places, and that's actually kept keeping him out. He only made an appearance off the bench so far since then. So I think because of that injury, and because Milik is on his way out anyways, we just throw Milik in there, give him another match, and more importantly, let Mertens rest. Then we had Kostas Manolas go down with a rib injury in the Sassuolo match. And then at the very end of the Inter match, Koulibaly stepped on Maximovic, and he appears to have an ankle injury. We're not quite sure. We're hoping that it's not serious. There's further testing to be done. So with all of those injuries, I think now the priority for Gattuso is going to be to get healthy as opposed to try to win this match. He still will try to win, and Napoli does have the depth that they can still take it to Lazio. But I don't think he's going to risk any players that have any type of injury. Gattuso has done an excellent job of rotating his squad since the restart. He generally makes 6 or 7 changes every round. So for that reason, I think we'll still see a competitive side. But I think now the important thing is just to stay healthy and not pick up any more injuries.
So, Jerry, your thoughts from a Lazio perspective. Obviously, there's really a lot to play for Lazio because, again, financial incentive to finish as high in the table as possible, even if the European coefficient doesn't change, so the Champions League tier wouldn't change, still potentially more prize money and sponsorship money from finishing high as possible. And then you've got Chito Immobile, who's, you know, more than likely going to be Capo Caniniere, even if he doesn't score this weekend, unless Ronaldo just gets like five penalties in Juventus' final match. But Chito, he wants that record. He's one away from tying Higuain. If he gets a double in this match, he sets the Serie A all-time record. I know Lazio wants to win the match. So what are your thoughts, Jerry, heading in? Do you think Chito can tie or set the record? And do you think Lazio comes out with the W?
Well, I've been trying to look for some stats based on Chito Immobile versus Napoli in the past few seasons, and I can't find anything, but my recollection, okay, just in the past three games, remembering the scores, Immobile scored earlier, I believe it was in January. Yeah, back in January, he scored the winning goal. And then, was it January? I can't remember. Yeah, in January, sorry. And then, could have scored in the Coppa Italia, but he hoofed that freaking penalty shot. But we're all human. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
And then last year, he scored, I believe, in both legs against Napoli. He scored the late goal. They were down 2-0, and he scored the first goal for Lazio late in the game. And the game prior to that, he scored that beautiful individual goal from a pass from Acerbi in the season opener against Napoli. And aside from losing two of the last three games against Napoli and have a very poor record in recent times, losing seven of the last eight, and their recent win has been their only win against Napoli in a long time, Immobile really has the upper hand on Napoli in recent times that I can recall. And I feel that this is motivating for him, because he knows in the back of his head that he can score against Napoli. And the fact that he's playing against them on Saturday maybe gives him that extra hope that he knows what he can do. I've always felt that Napoli has a good back four. They're very strong. They're an underrated team. I think their season has really made people forget who Napoli really is because of a bad start. I do believe that Lazio is going to go all out. They have nothing else after this. This is their last game of the season. They have nothing to worry about.
That's a great point as well. They don't have, like, where Napoli might be thinking about Barca for Lazio. This is the last ride. So this is it for this year.
I feel that after the Inter Napoli game, when I was watching it, I thought Napoli had a good game. I thought Insigne was a little up and down. He kind of struggled a little bit, but he's been their best player in recent times, so I'm not going to take anything away from him. But their minds are already already in Champions League. They no longer care about Serie A. There's nothing to gain other than the respect of their coach and trying to earn a position as a starter. I definitely expect Lozano to start Saturday, which could really create a lot of difficulty for Lazio, because I think he's a very good player and his speed can cause a lot of troubles for our back end. Joaquin Correa is back. That was a big loss for X amount of time. He wasn't in the lineup. Caicedo will not be starting, thank God. I'm hoping that Johnny is not starting on Saturday. I would really like to see Dejavon Anderson start over Johnny. I think he's just more serviceable on the left side. He can help much more. We have a lot of healthy bodies back. I know that Chervy did pick up an injury earlier. He's been battling it. I would assume that he's going to continue to play through it. There's just a lot of players are healthy. Like Luis Alberto had that one game he rested against Juventus. It's really paid off. He looks much better, more confident, he's just more alive in the games. Sergei Milinkovic-Savic, I expect him to start. Manuel Lazzari did pick up a yellow card, but that's not gonna against Brescia, but that's not gonna stop him from playing. I think the biggest factor is Correa and Luis Alberto. Luis Alberto, we saw the pass he made to Immobile where he scored against Brescia, and it's funny that all his goals, a lot of his goals are from the left side through a passing lane, and it's like, I don't know how Alberto continues to figure out the same way to link up with Immobile. And another factor is the speed. I've been saying this, and I like Bobby Adekanye as well over Caicedo. I think him and Correa really complement Immobile a lot because of their speed and their ability to separate and create space between the strikers, the forwards, and the defense. And with Caicedo, it's too similar to how Immobile plays. And Caicedo really slows Chiro down. He really does, in my opinion. I think he's just a big body that is just... He's decent. He's a decent player. I don't think he's bad. But in recent times, I just feel like he's really slowed Chiro down. Maybe because he's not healthy and he's battling an injury. And he's been overplayed. But... I think Lazio is going to come out firing Saturday. They have a lot to play for, like you said. Second place is up for grabs if Inter ties. On the other side, though, Napoli does have a good deep squad. And Joel's right. There's a lot of depth in the squad, much more than Lazio has. So even if Mertens can't play, even if Insigne can't play, and Costas Manolas can't play. They're very deep on the back end. I think they have a lot of options up front. So, and Napoli, even though they have nothing to play for, no team likes to lose. And there's right. always that rivalry between Napoli and Lazio. So I don't think they're going to let Immobile have an easy day trying to break the record. We saw that with Brescia. Brescia is relegated, yet they still came out hard. Their goalkeeper, Andinacci, had a really good game. So, there is always a case for people, for players, say David Ospina and Meret. Maybe if Ospina is not the starting goalkeeper next year and he may not be longer with the club, maybe his final game is to show what he still has, what he's able to do against a big club such as Lazio. There's always incentives and factors for players. I think the biggest factor is always their job. And sometimes they, even Lozano. Lozano hasn't fit well with Napoli. He's been up and down, but he's starting to earn the respect of Gattuso. And Saturday, again, is a prime example of here's a player that has an opportunity probably to start. What can I do? It's like an audition to show Gattuso what he's able to do, right? So there's always, I always say, no one ever looks to lose, but there's always an angle for anybody in a game.
So with Chiro Immobile chasing the goal-scoring record, there's another layer to this that involves Napoli. As we all know, the man who currently holds the Serie A record of 36 goals is a former Napoli player who did it in a Napoli shirt, and that was Gonzalo Higuain. And Joe, you put up an interesting Twitter poll, and I haven't seen, I don't know if it's gone final, but I haven't checked in on how the voting is coming in. Obviously, a lot of Napoli fans follow you. Now, Higuain set the record in a Napoli shirt, but, you know, he's not a very popular guy anymore in Napoli with the way he left to go to Juventus. Chiro doesn't wear the Napoli shirt, but he is a Napoli native. He grew up in the city. And you asked if people would actually prefer that Napolitano Chiro Immobile sets the record, or if they'd prefer that Higuain's record set in a Napoli shirt would stay. What's the feedback you've gotten on that, and how do you feel about it, Joe?
Yeah, so the funny thing is I thought this would be more 50-50. So far, and the poll hasn't closed. I made the mistake of setting it for a bit too long. I think it'll close tomorrow. But last time I checked, it was about 75% for Chiro Immobile.
Wow. And, well, that was all Jerry voting from his burner accounts, though.
Yeah, I kind of teased Jerry earlier in the day. I texted him separately and said, hey, I need you to do me a big favor. And when he wrote back, I said, listen, Immobile is killing Higuain in my poll. I need you to go vote for Higuain just to balance the scales a little bit. But he had already voted, unfortunately. But yeah, the general
consensus. I voted for Chiro also in your poll, just so you know.
Yeah, and you know, as much as it's nice that the record is held by a Napoli player, the most of the feedback has been that, you know, most Napoli fans will not forget how Higuain left, and they feel betrayed. And another interesting point, which was something I didn't even think of, was that a few people mentioned that, you know, it would be nice for an Italian-born player, so not necessarily a Napolitan player, but just someone that's Italian, to hold the record for most goals scored in a single Italian season. a couple of the other comments had to do with the penalties, which I don't want to get too much into that. I know you guys have already talked about that. But what I will say is that if you look at Lazio's last couple of matches, there is a conscious effort from the other players to try to get him goals. We saw, I think, in the match before Brescia, I think it was against Verona, where Lazio got a late penalty and Luis Alberto was lined up standing on the ball to take the shot. And credit to Immobile, because from what I could tell, he didn't try to steal that penalty from Luis Alberto. He just allowed him to go take it. And then at the last second, Luis Alberto gave the ball to Immobile, and he got the goal, and they shared a nice embrace after that. And then last match against Brescia, it seemed like the goal in that match was not to win. It was to get goals for Immobile, because they were just – there were times – there was one play where Joni had the ball on the left side, and he should have shot, but he tried to pass it, and when everyone gave him shit for it, he kind of pointed to Immobile, like, I'm trying to give him another goal. So, you know, that's definitely Lazio's target. They don't have anything else to play for. And what's interesting, though, is our own Ciro, Dries Mertens, was asked about this in an interview, and what he said is, no, we don't want Immobile to score, but it's not because they're trying to thwart his chance of breaking the record. It's because if Immobile scores, that means we're not winning the match. Or they scored against us, which hurts our chances of winning. So definitely the player's mentality is they still want to win this match, so they're not going to make it easy for them.
Fair enough. No, I like that. So a couple other things I want to get to in this episode. Have you guys seen the Taylor Twellman tweet that just got Serie A Twitter just all over this guy? I mean, he's an MLS analyst primarily. I think people kind of missed the point of his tweet about Zlatan and Serie A. So he was retweeting with comment this tweet from the MLS Buzz Twitter account, where they wrote that, hey, and Zlatan, by the way, had another big game, a big performance for Milan. And so the MLS Buzz account tweets, Zlatan Ibrahimovic scores again for AC Milan. He now has 9 goals and 4 assists in just under 1,400 minutes since returning to Europe from LA Galaxy. And then Taylor Twellman quote tweeted it with this caption. He says, so what does this say about at Serie A? And of course, that tweet made everybody thinking, oh, this guy's taking a shot at our league. And Serie A Twitter just lost it on Taylor Twellman. And I guess I can understand why people are annoyed, because there are a lot of individuals out there, not talking about Taylor Twellman specifically, but a lot of individuals out there on football Twitter don't pay enough attention to Serie A. They don't watch it. They don't respect it. So they only care about the Premier League, and maybe they care about La Liga because they cheer for, you know, Barca or Real Madrid, and they constantly take a shit on Serie A. They just don't respect it. So I guess I can understand that Serie A fans have kind of a defense mechanism that anytime you think someone's talking trash about your league, they're going to jump all over them. But I really think that what Mr. Twellman was trying to do was not, you know, pile on Serie A. I think he was basically pointing out the fact that, and it's very clear to me what he was doing there, because guys, when Zlatan in his late 30s was playing in MLS and he was scoring goals for fun, what were all the European footy snobs saying? Oh, well, that's a Finnish league. It's a joke of a league. So, of course, Zlatan, who's older than dirt, is scoring over there. So I think all that Taylor Twellman was trying to do is say, oh, look, Zlatan, who was scoring for fun in MLS, is now scoring for fun in Serie A. So you shouldn't have been disrespecting MLS the entire time. I mean, whether he's right or wrong, that's a whole different debate. But I think for his tweet, Jerry, I think all that he was trying to do was defend the MLS. I don't think he was really trying to take a conscious shot at Serie A, but a lot of people took it that way.
I think he's defending Serie A in a way, because he's saying, here's a guy who came to Milan, and look what he's doing in a league such as Serie A. We a lot of people, like you said, don't give Serie a lot of credit. They say it's a league that is so easy to play and boring. But yet this guy comes in and makes a massive difference, turns the club around, and also he came from MLS and he's praising that a player such as Ibra came from LA Galaxy, you said, the MLS, came back to Serie A, and look what he's done from our league, and still you shit on us because our league's not good enough, we don't have the talent, blah, blah, blah. He's staying in shape. He's scoring goals. He's doing everything he had to for LA Galaxy. Goes back to Serie A and transitions that success that he had at LA Galaxy back to Milan, and it's really helped him stay on par with his career and still being able to play at such a high level. So I think he's just trying to show that MLS is not a joke of a league, but at the same time, he's also saying that Serie A is not a joke of a league either, because look what he did in both leagues and look what he's been able to do with both clubs in both leagues. So I don't think he's trying to give a shot on Serie A. I think what he's just trying to say that Serie A is not a joke, but along that MLS is not a joke either. He's showing that how competitive the leagues are and what he's able to do. So I correct me if I'm wrong, if I'm reading it into it wrong, if I'm not reading the message right, but I that's the only way I can look at it. I don't really take it offensively, because nowhere does he say that Serie A is a joke of a league to play in.
Right.
Like, he's not really disrespecting Serie A. And I agree. A lot of people praise EPL so much, and I find that Serie A is the hardest league to play in. It's so found, and it's so tactically smart. Like, the way players are positional and the way you play the game. Whereas in the EPL, if you're not fast, you're useless. That's it. Like, it's just speed. And maybe I'm contradicting myself. Who knows? But I just think that Serie A is just on a whole different level when it comes to the actual game. That's just me. I just think that managers know how to approach it right. And when you see Pep Guardiola and Jurgen Klopp, they kind of remind me of a type of Serie A style managers, where they're very possession type. They like to keep hold of the ball. And that's how Serie A is. They like to keep hold of the ball. They don't like just to turn it over. They like to build from the back, move forward to the midfield, right to the striker. And when I watch Chelsea games, a lot of the time they don't do that. They just, it's like run and gun. Let's get it all the way to the top. And it's one guy just carrying it all the way up. And it's like, okay, here we go. You know what's going to happen. But that's just my view, though.
Did you see the Twellman tweet that we're talking about, Joe? And do you feel like Jerry and I, that I really don't think he was taking a shot at Serie A? Because if he was taking a shot at Serie A, that would also mean he was taking a shot at Zlatan. And I don't believe Twellman would do that. I think he was trying to defend the MLS.
Yeah, I did see the tweet. I didn't read too much into it, and I didn't read the responses either. But the way he worded it, he left it open to interpretation, and good luck when you do that on Twitter, right? You're going to probably get more of a negative reaction than a positive one. What I would say about Ibrahimovic is, you have to give him credit for knowing his limitations. If you watch the way he plays now, it's very, very different than when he played with Milan the first time around. He's really conserving his energy. He's really walking most of the time. But
it's funny you say that, because I noticed that. Like, I watched him a lot with LA Galaxy last year, and my big takeaway on Zlatan was he only runs when he decides it's time to run. And to be honest, like, seeing him like walk through a lot of matches, I thought, this guy's going to be finished if he comes back to Europe. Like, I really didn't think, like, when I found out Zlatan was going to Milan, I thought, oh, this is really just not going to work for him. But God bless him. Like, he finds a way to, because I guess he's so great and so talented, and he still has enough stamina to do it when he has to do it, that he, and being smart, I mean, at his age, you've got to be intelligent to still play this game at that level. Like, he has figured out a way to do the bare minimum physically and still affect games in an incredibly positive way.
Yeah, exactly. When, you know, Zlatan has two things that are not impacted by his age. One is his size, and the other is his intelligence. And what he's doing is he's putting his body in positions that open up chances to score. And when he does get those chances, he's putting them away, because these are not givens. Even though a lot of his goals are headers and they're open shots, you still have to finish them. And, you know, I mentioned Lorenzo Insigne. He's had so many open chances of late, and he hasn't finished. What I would say, too, is Zlatan's success is a testament to the job that Pioli has done at Milan. and putting players in the positions that they're going to excel in. So you look at players like Çalhanoğlu, for example. These guys are, and you know, Teo Hernandez, they're moving the ball really, really beautifully. They're creating these chances, and Zlatan is there to put them away. So I think that was another sort of, not issue, but something I thought of when I saw the tweet, is that the focus was solely on Zlatan, and I'm sure some of the responses were that, you know, this is not, Milan is not about Zlatan right now. It's really a team effort.
Yeah, fair enough. And I got to run in a moment, but I do want to mention that a guy that we rip on a lot on this pod, just for, you know, being a tad overrated, but Federico Chiesa had a hat trick against Bologna. So respect, especially that third goal that he scored was really a worldie. So a nice game for him. Real quick, I'll go around the table. Where do you think Chiesa plays next year? I think that probably Juve would be the leader in the clubhouse. And if not Juve, probably abroad, because I don't see Inter very interested in him at this point. And I don't really know if any other club in Italy would meet the asking price from Fiorentina. So what do you think, Jerry? I'll start with you. Where do you think Chiesa plays next year?
Well, that's a tough one. The asking price has to be met. Fiorentina is not in a bind to sell him. I'll just say that he probably stays with Fiorentina another season. Maybe he plays under De Rossi, see how that works out. We know that he's coming in as the new manager next year. Maybe some new life into him. I don't know where to expect to see where he goes. I feel like Chiesa has a lot to offer. He's just very inconsistent. But at the same time, it could just be the fact that the changes in management this season, not playing him in his actually preferred position, playing him as a false nine at times, and he's not being used the way he should be, which may be why we're not seeing the full value of what we can really get from Chiesa and what he's able to really produce on the field. I'm still a believer that Orsolini is a much better player than Chiesa. That's just me. I love to be proven wrong. Just when I see Orsolini play, he doesn't play one way where he just goes down the wing and he keeps his head down and he buries himself. I find that a lot of the time, Chiesa just really plays with his head down. Orsolini's really looking for that pass. He's very creative. I like his touch. I like the way he moves with the ball, like the way he offers. So I personally don't know where Chiesa goes, but my guess, if I had to go on the spot right now, I'm going to say he stays with Fiorentina at least for half the season, and then there's the possibility he gets sold in January.
What do you think, Joe? Where does Chiesa play next year?
A question for you guys. Do you know if he's still currently under contract or if he expires?
He's currently under contract. Yeah, I'm not sure how many. I'm not sure how many years he has left. But yeah, he's under contract for sure.
Okay, yeah. So then I think he's going to stay then, for a couple of reasons. One, in this economic environment, we've seen it with a number of players. Fiorentina is not going to get the offer that they want for this player. The other reason I think he's going to stay is because it seems that Comiso has a lot of loyalty to his players, to his staff, and perhaps a little bit of short-term memory as well. And while Chiesa's probably had a disappointing season as a whole, he's been pretty good since the restart, and he started scoring goals lately. And we just saw that, I think it was today or yesterday, that Comiso renewed Beppe Iacchini's contract, which was a shock to a lot of people. We all thought he was sort of a stopgap coach. So for those reasons, I think that Chiesa will stay. And the other thing is, Juventus's favorite thing to do is to pick up players on a Bosman. So
yeah,
I wouldn't
true.
Be shocked to see them wait out the contract. I don't know how long is left, and then try to sign him for free at that point.
I thought De Rossi was coming to Fiorentina. I didn't even know that Beppe Iacchini they picked up an option for him. I thought De Rossi was coming. Wasn't that the news that he was supposed to be the new manager?
Yeah, it turned out to be horseshit. Yeah, I can remember when that rumor came out, and then I don't remember which outlets it was, but people were reporting it like it was a done deal. And then Comiso came out and rubbished that rumor. Yeah, it turned out to be bullshit, I guess.
Oh, fuck, man. I didn't know that. You should have fucking told me, Joel. Fuck it. Here I am talking about Derossi coming in, and then he's going to be coaching Fiorentina. Oh, man. I don't know if it's going to work out with Beppe Iacchini with him. Oh, God. I think it's such... Oh, I think this is really bad for Chiesa. He needs a better manager that can really get the best out of him. I know he got a hat trick yesterday. It doesn't change my opinion on Iacchini. I just think that Joe does provide a lot of good points. And now I like to reiterate my points now, because now I know that Beppe Iacchini's staying. Jesus Christ. Oh, God. I think it's really bad for Chiesa. I think they got to get rid of him. He's not going to play well underneath him. And the problem is they're not going to get what they want. It just may be another bad season for Chiesa. I think this is a bad mistake by Fiorentina picking up his the option on his contract. Just, they should be getting someone who has much more experience and has to take this team to another level. Iacchini, like you say, he's a stopgap. That's the difference between Stefano Pioli and Iacchini. I think Stefano Pioli can get that team to that next level if he's given the right players. We're seeing that with Milan. With Iacchini, he's just good to come in, fill the gap for the season, try to save things, keep everything afloat. I don't see him taking this club to the next level next year, and my prediction is he gets fired within the first 10 games.
Wow. So there you have it. We'll wrap it up on that note. Want to say a huge thank you to Joe Fischetti, who does a great job on the Forza Napoli pod. Joe, where can they find you on social media? Where can they find the pod?
Yeah, so first of all, thank you for having me on again. It's been a while, and it's always a blast speaking to you guys. You can find my personal Twitter account, which is mostly Napoli stuff, and I dabble in Serie B a little bit, at Joe_Fischetti5, and you can find the podcast at Forza Napoli Pod.
Beautiful. And you can find Jerry on Twitter at JMancini8. He's always keeping you updated on Calcio. I mean, great articles, some Premier League stuff as well, so he's a really good follow. You can follow me at Alex Donna. You can follow our show at CalcioConPod. You know, for those who came to this episode expecting me to break down Messi to Inter, I mean, it maybe if pigs start flying, we'll break that down on our upcoming episode. But that'll do it for this one. We'll talk to you guys again soon on another episode of the Calcio Connection podcast. Ciao.